Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. We are fresh off of NBA Cup quarterfinals action. We talk about what happened, how the Magic were able to get it done, how the Knicks were able to get it done, how the Thunder and the Spurs were able to get it done, and then we preview the semifinals matchups coming over this weekend. What are the key battles? Who are the X factors? And ultimately, who's going to win and set up the championship game? We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan. And joining me, as always, is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you?
Feeling good. Feeling great. Happy to be here. Excited to be here. Thank you, everyone, for embracing your bounce and ready to talk about the NBA Cup.
We've got plenty of NBA Cup action coming your way. The quarterfinals are out of the way. We got the semifinals coming up. We're not too far away from the championship game. Very excited about the semifinals matchups that we have. But before we get there and get into some preview content, I think it's fair to talk about how we got to this current point. We'll start with the Eastern Conference, Steve. The Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat faced off for what felt like the 17th time already this year. And if anyone follows the Miami Heat or Orlando Magic closely, you know what those early season matchups are generally like. But we got another round of it this time. The Orlando Magic getting a 117-108 victory in this one. Desmond Bane leading the way with 37 points. And I think for me, broader strokes for this game, this was exactly what the Orlando Magic envisioned when they brought Desmond Bane into the fold. A guy that could unlock different avenues of their offense. And when necessary, I can take this thing over. You look at the beginning of this game between Miami and Orlando, and the Heat are shot out of a cannon in this game. 13-0 start for them. Andrew Wiggins step back midi. Andrew Wiggins three. Tyler Hero shakes loose for a couple of buckets. Jamal Mosley was the most annoyed person on the planet as he calls that opening timeout as the Heat get out to this 13-0 surge. But Orlando eventually settles in. Desmond Bane has a huge second quarter. He has a huge fourth quarter. But with me, I was just super impressed with the different ways that Desmond Bane was able to make an impact offensively. The drives, the three-point shooting, the timely baskets overall really popped for me with this one. So I think I kind of come out of this one with, this is what the Bane experience can be like. This is what it's been as of late, as he's played a lot better. We are fresh off of an Orlando Magic conversation and some of the strides that they made recently. But this is a Bane game for me, Steve.
No, I understand. I think Desmond Bane showcased exactly why Orlando brought him in. I think the biggest thing when you look at the totality of this game is Orlando has really tried to put themselves in a different place offensively with just a conviction that they have as far as getting the ball up the court, throwing it ahead, looking to attack and trying to flow in the half court. I don't know if the Magic are able to survive in the same way last year in a game like this with the way that Miami started offensively. But again, Orlando plays defense. They believe in what they're doing offensively. So we get some stops, we can run, we get some easy ones, or we're going to try and do what we do offensively and keep going. And that kind of built throughout the game. And so I think that's where you kind of credit Orlando and you see the vision of, okay, we have enough defense. Once our defensive impact hits, now our offense feel it even more. And that's a tough combination to deal with. And so Desmond Bane, the way that they can move him around the court, his attacks, his drives, their guards overall driving have been huge. So that's kind of the blend that Orlando has to get to consistently. I'm sure they wouldn't have liked to be in that position, but that's where they were.
Yeah. Like 13-0 for Miami to start this one. Ends up getting to 20-4 midway through the first quarter. And we're watching that game together. And it's like, hey, is Orlando aware that there is money on the line here? Like, do y'all want to go to Vegas? Because Miami seems very pumped and primed to, one, get their get back with some of these earlier regular season matchups against Orlando. But ultimately, we can just kind of run y'all out of the building. Like, we have our early drives going because our defense is ready to go. We can mix in Bam at the level. We can mix in some of these switches. Desmond Bane didn't have success early in that game. Tyler Bancaro also didn't have success early in that game, and the Heat were able to run off of those makes. And I think when you think about what Miami's offense has been so far this year, as open as it's been, the reliance on those drives and those cuts to clear space, if we can get stops and or we can force turnovers, it makes it a lot easier for us to establish ourselves. To kind of bounce off what you said, Steve, once Orlando's defense settled in, And I think you really felt that once they started making some of those subs, once they were able to switch a little bit more than they were earlier in that game, you started to see Miami's offense slow down a little bit. It also helped that Orlando finally started making some baskets. Like Desmond Bane had a little floater out of pick and roll midway through the first to kind of settle them. Once the defense settled in, Miami worked later in the clock. They started to flow into more of the handoff things with Bam as a hub. It wasn't just driving, kicking, getting down here early. Orlando, it felt like, was able to dictate more terms. And I guess the question I'll pose to you is to kind of zoom out with this one. As Miami's offense kind of slowed post-first quarter, how much do you attribute that to what Orlando was able to dictate versus anything Miami might have left on the table process-wise?
Well, I mean, I think it's a loaded question in the sense that Miami, yes, they need the drives to hit at a certain level. They have to make open shots. Their defense has to play enough so they can get everything they want. But at the same time, they are playing fast as well. And so because of that mindset, you may take some early shots. You may drive and may not sustain the drives or, you know, look to kick at the right time. And that opens up Orlando, who also wants to play fast. So you just put yourself in a position where we kind of have to hit these notes and whoever hit them, get it, got it. So I think for Orlando, it was just commitment to staying in front of the ball, not overhelping too much, giving up shots that they believe that Miami can make, and staying consistent. And I think that's the tough part, especially if you're Miami and you're rolling. You know, you're up eight. You know, you push it, you get it up to 10, you keep moving it. We're going to keep playing the way we play. Well, Orlando's conviction is we're going to keep playing the way we play as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And that's where you get to end of the first quarter, like, oh, this is closer than I thought. And then Desmond Bane starts to erupt. Bat screen, flies off a screen, gets a three to go. That's early bucket in the second quarter for him. A little bit later, Orlando goes to Chicago action, turns into a pick and roll for Desmond Bane. He rejects, he gets downhill, there's another basket. Miami misses a shot. Orlando wants to push. It is Desmond Bane versus Tyler Hero. He just wins a drive. A little bit later, it's another pick and roll with Desmond Bane. Gets cut off by Davion Mitchell. Passes the ball. Relocates to the left wing. Knocks down a three. All of a sudden, this big lead that Miami built early in that first quarter, more of a moderate lead as we exited, now it's 41-40 Miami. And it's like, oh, wait a minute. We have a basketball game here. And like, I know I always chuckle a little bit after the fact anyway. In real time, I've watched a lot of Miami Heat basketball in my day. And so, you know, 10-point, 12-point, 14-point lead doesn't mean too much to me because I've just seen so many stretches of Miami Heat offense where it's like, oh, this just does not exist anymore. Here we go. So it wasn't a super surprise, but it was, to your point, impressive that Orlando stuck to their convictions. We want to keep the ball in front. Again, I did think the switching helped bog things down for Miami a bit. And I think you really felt that more so in the second half of this game. But they kept rolling. Desmond Bane kept going. You got contributions from a little bit of everyone. Timely shots from Jalen Suggs. Timely shots and drives and cuts from Tristan Da Silva, who has continued to play well for this Orlando Magic group. But an impressive effort overall. Orlando gets the dub. Last question I ask you, another one on the Miami Heat. I guess zooming out from this game. Do you have any concerns about their offense?
No, why are we playing this game? We do this every year. I never understand it. Oh, look, this team is doing this. Oh, it doesn't work. We did it with Memphis last year. We did it with Memphis this year. We're doing it with Miami this year. This is how it works. This is how offense and defense coexist. You are doing something well offensively. We scout what you do to try and take it away. And so, yeah. This is something we've seen the entire time. Like, I think it's always interesting. It's not necessarily that, oh, we're facing better teams and so we're struggling. Yeah, that's a part of it, but Orlando has size, they have length. Every time Miami has faced a team with size and length, the question has been, can they win these drives? Can they generate paint points? Can they generate the type of shots they want? We know what they want to do. We've seen it in practice. Mm-hmm. In those moments, they have to find a way to figure out, okay, how many drives we need to win? How many threes can we make? Like, if we're not shooting the ball well, we're not getting one-on-one wins, and we're not playing defense, yeah, we're going to have a tough time. Every team has a winning formula. Every team has a losing formula as well. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily overly concerned. Are things they have to work on? Yeah. But I think they can add to it. They can add pick and roll. They can add movement. We saw a lot of staggers. It's not like it was all isolation and one-on-one and, oh, well, it's just broken. No. This is how basketball works. And some teams are tougher matchups for you. You learn from those, and you either grow from it or you keep hitting the same wall. Like, you have to figure out your issues. You have to work them out through the regular season. And then in the playoffs, you're going to be presented with either the same problem or a different version of it. This is just how basketball works. I'm sorry.
There you go. That's fair. Quickly to your point, Orlando 15 of 32 from three in this game. Miami 8 of 33. I think anytime you are outscored by 21 points beyond the arc, it's going to be a tougher time for you if you're not offsetting that somewhere else. And then the thing that I was looking up, because I've naturally been watching a lot of Miami Heat basketball, kind of tracking how well this style continues to rock. Like, they were a top 10 offense. They've slid out of the top 10. It's still a good offense overall. But just kind of looking at their quarter splits were interesting for me. So in first quarters, a 118.4 offensive rating for the Miami Heat. That's 10th league-wide. In second quarters, it's a 117.1. That's 11th. In third quarters, that drops to 110.1. That's 26th. Rises a little bit in the fourth quarter, 113.9. That's 18th. And so I think that combined with, to your point, these other teams are paid to take away what other teams do well. We have more tape. We also just want to guard because that's our jobs, et cetera. It's not a surprise that we're starting to see a little bit of a dip. And I guess for me, like, I'm not super concerned because there is such low-hanging fruit for the Miami Heat offense to diversify their offense. And really, in their case, it's just adding stuff that they've already done before. Like, we were talking earlier this year when Miami was legitimately a top 10 offense at the time. It's like, okay, yeah, this is happening. Norm Powell's having a great year. Davion Mitchell's getting downhill all the time. Jaime Hawkins Jr., sixth man of the year, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, oh, yeah, so these BAM elbow touches are pretty much non-existent in terms of volume. These BAM handoffs are pretty much non-existent. And, like, my early question to you was, like, hey, how do you feel about the balance? Because it feels like it's a lot of drive, 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 drive. Oh, we got to get BAM something. Let's slow it down to get to him. I feel like the balance has gotten better as the year's gone on. There is still more room for more of the BAM, quote-unquote BAM package, if Miami wants to do that. Like, one of the early shots during that 13-0 surge for the Heat was Norman Powell, BAM Adebayo, two-man game. Just a little bit of pitch and catch. Norm gives it to BAM, flies off a handoff, is a pull-up three because Orlando wasn't set. It's like, yeah, we can just bake this kind of stuff in. To your point, it doesn't just have to be clear wing, win in isolation, and then we get on about our business. So they have things to add. It is just interesting, like, looking at, you know, what it's been as of late, as the Heat are now on a losing streak.
I mean, I think going back to that game, one of the final thoughts, you just got to play better defense. I mean, I think what Orlando did was, we're going to make you make a second effort. Like, obviously, Desmond Bane had a lot of great drives, but okay, we're going to go pick and roll. Do you want to switch this? Do you want to show nail help? Okay, it's a kick. That's another drive. Where's your help at? Now we get to that second drive for driving kicks. So you got to have multiple efforts defensively. Everything kind of just is works together for a lot of these teams. And if one piece is a little bit off, you either need the other one to carry it until you can fix it, or you need to figure out how to get that a little bit better so you can win this game.
But that's fair. Let's move to the other East matchup to set up the semifinals. The New York Knicks taking on the Toronto Raptors in, I guess, what should have been the RJ Barrett / Emmanuel Quickley / OG Anunoby Bowl. But, you know, two of those pieces were missing, so it wasn't the same bit. But either way, a 117-101 victory for the New York Knicks. Jalen Brunson leading the way with 35 points in this one. A 20-point first quarter. Just one on a basic level. What an electric opening to this game in terms of shot making between these two teams, and more specifically, Jalen Brunson made just about everything he tossed up in that first quarter. And on the other end, here's Brandon Ingram. And, you know, we are fresh off of, well, at least I'm, you know, talking about my concerns with Toronto's offense. Like, hey, what's happening with this half-court offense right now? This is a lot on Brandon Ingram. Some of the shot making is tailed off. We want to see quicker reads, etc. None of that really mattered in the first quarter of this game, as Brandon Ingram got loose in pretty much every way you wanted it to. But then he went to the bench. Then the second quarter started. And the New York Knicks effectively ended the game there, in my opinion. It was largely a Scotty Barnes-led second unit. And you just saw the restraints of, okay, where exactly are we getting our reliable offense from? Where are we getting our self-creation from? Especially in light of how New York matched up and the way that they defended. And it wasn't even a heavy Brunson second quarter, again, coming off of 20 in the first. But actually, we can switch. We can disrupt. We can show help because you have some non-shooters out here. You may turn the ball over because you're forcing it, or you're just working deep in the clock. And on the other end, it felt like anyone in a Knicks uniform could drive the basketball, largely because the defense was tilted, but you did just kind of see that overall intention. OG Anunoby getting downhill and getting to the free throw line. Got to the free throw line quite a few times in that second quarter. You get rid of Tyler Kolek drives. You get some Jordan Clarkson mixing in some floaters in that second quarter. You look up, I think it was, what, 34 to 13 or something close to that in that second quarter. Just like, oh, my goodness, what happened to this offense? So I think I came out of this, you know, similar to what we've talked about with the New York Knicks. They can just hit you in so many different places. Like, there is just an era of overall empowerment that Mike Brown has established with this group, to where Brunson can obviously be the star, but Mikal can get loose if he has a matchup that he likes. OG can get loose if he has a matchup that he likes. Jordan Clarkson can do the same thing when he comes off the bench. Again, random Tyler Kolek drives. And then on top of that, if we miss, we can crush you on the offensive glass. We can win there too. It was just an all-encompassing effort for the New York Knicks in this basketball game.
Well, I think this is just kind of the payoff for the Knicks continuing to play well and understand the concepts of playing within what Mike Brown wants. So he wanted them to understand how to play together, get the spacing right, get the cutting right. And now you see them play with a flow that looks a little bit different. And so Jalen Brunson had a lot of, you know, great buckets in that first quarter, but it's also sudden. You're not exactly sure when it's going to happen. So he can tap into the hero ball button element, but it could become someone drove and kicked to him and now he goes to work, or he gets it later in the clock. As opposed to save us, it's just, okay, I'm within the flow. They cut so well, they clear space, everyone looks to drive and kick. And so what they do is they just keep playing off each other. And the more they have success with it, the more they believe. And I think that's one of those things where you have to credit the Knicks for doing that consistently. On the other end, if you're Toronto, I mean, this is just kind of what it is at the current moment. There's a contrast for Toronto when they get stops and they're able to flow and they're able to get movement versus the moments in the half court where teams are just kind of saying, these are the shots you get. These are the drives you get. We're going to show help. So whoever can get, could get in the paint, there's going to be help. You got to kick it, either knocking down these shots or you know, we're going to rotate and contest and live with that result. Do you want to play slower? Like, I think there was a possession where Brandon Ingram got it up above half court at 21. Unfortunately, he had five Knicks defenders staring at him. And yeah. So it's just like, okay, how do we get our movement? How do we get downhill? Everyone was kind of slotted in their right positions, but now everyone kind of has to elevate in a sense. And the scouting report is different. You know, you got a different job, you got a different task. You want to go off ball movement? We're going to be physical. We're going to switch. We're going to keep it in front. And that's what makes it tough. So when the Knicks are able to play solid defense, be active, cut off the paint, make you miss tough shots, and they push on the other end, that's a good formula for them. And so I thought their defense was active, and then they just continued to flow offensively. And, you know, you mentioned the bridges on Anunoby, throw-aheads and transition are fantastic. The cutting is great. They just kind of are getting it. And I think Josh Hart being in that starting lineup really helps elevate them.
Yeah, I think you've been on it with Josh Hart and how important he's been to this Knicks resurgence. His insertion to the start lineup, and even before then, like just his ability to fill whatever role is necessary and be trusted with handling the ball, initiating things, being used as a screener when necessary. It's just been a lot of fun to watch that continue to grow together. I guess quickly bouncing off of the Toronto of it all, because you said like so many guys have had to step up in light of these injuries. It reminded me, Samson Folk just recently wrote a piece about Toronto's offense, and he highlighted Jamal Shedd in particular, who before these injuries hit, before the Raptors go on the slide and the offense slides on top of that, the playmaking was really popping with Jamal Shedd. All he had to do, really, I'm going to play really strong point of attack defense. I'm going to bother you with the full court stuff. Offensively, getting downhill on keeping the ball moving. Because we're getting so many stops, I can puncture the paint, get off of it, and now we have all these other guys that kind of attack, especially when he's on the floor with Mamu, with Scotty Barnes, if you talk about those kind of hybrid second units that have largely blitzed teams so far this year. You get into a situation now where Emmanuel Quickley is now also out. We don't need you to just keep things moving. We kind of need you to puncture the paint and actually be a threat. And, like, it's not that he is incapable, but, like, they certainly didn't get enough in this particular game. And I think just in general, it kind of highlights the thin line that Toronto has kind of been walking as of late in terms of generating advantages and being able to puncture those. Because I think what hurts them even more, like even going back to the second quarter, where you did have the possessions where they were able to get some movement. They were able to get Brandon Ingram downhill a little bit. You make the right kick, open shot, you're not knocking those down. It's like, well, we did the right thing that hurts. The Knicks are already rolling, so it just feels worse, and things just kind of snowball from there. So, like, I am just kind of curious to see when this flips for Toronto moving forward. Like, I think, obviously, you don't want to lose, but they'll probably take the little break for right now. I want to see this offense turn around. They are still a good team. It's just been a really rough stretch. I think the Knicks did a really good job of taking advantage of that.
Nakai is the Snuck Raptors talking to the 15th consecutive podcast.
They just play. What you want me to do? All right, Steve, let's quickly get through the West. First game of the night on Wednesday, the Oklahoma City Thunder, they have won again. They are now 24-1 and continue their stretch as the most dominant team in basketball right now, and they are putting themselves on a historic pace. A 138-89 victory in this basketball game. Shea with 28-8. He continues his 20-point game streak. Chet with 24-8 in this one. But the story of this game for me was this defense. We have talked a lot about this OKC defense. I have talked a lot about this OKC defense. The amount of defenders that they could throw at you, the level of aggression and physicality that they play with, their level of switchability, their level of communication, which allows them to fly around when they aren't just switching everything. All of that popped in this basketball game. And all of that popped in the first quarter of this basketball game. Like, I highlight Chet, I highlight Shea. This game low-key started with Cason Wallace, who I will once again say, assuming that he is healthy enough, the minutes are up from last season, so he should be hitting that 20-plus minute threshold for games to qualify. He should just be on an all-defense team, just flat out. He has been that good as a screen navigator. He has been that good as a guy that forces turnovers on and off the ball. And you saw it early in this Phoenix game, just wrecking havoc. Early pick sixes, just early disruption overall. And I just found myself in awe, once again, of what this defensive unit can do together. This Phoenix Suns group was without Devin Booker. We did have some questions, you know, talked about it on the preview. Didn't know if Booker was going to play or not. But this is still largely a good basketball team in Phoenix. Like, they are not far removed from a win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, who we both agree are good, you know, finding some things, but are still a very good basketball team. And they did so without Devin Booker. That the Thunder made them look like this and effectively ended the game in the first half. And I'll quickly say on that front, Steve, as you know, I am a big fan of using cleaning the glass. I like the garbage time filtering and all that good stuff. Do you know when garbage time started in that game, according to cleaning the glass? The beginning of the fourth quarter. They logged the entire fourth quarter as garbage time. That is not a thing that usually happens. You get like the last 3 minutes, the last 4 minutes. If it's a blowout, a lead goes from like 18 to 25, something like that. You might get like the last 6 minutes or 7 minutes of the game. The entire quarter is absurd. And you could probably argue that it could have been earlier than that if they wanted to make it that, with the way that they blew this game up. And so it would be easy to be like, hey, man, Phoenix, what was this? This felt more pro OKC to me than any Phoenix slander that I may have had. Like, it was that kind of dominant effort defensively, and then everyone kind of got busy based on what the defense was able to do and set up for their transition and early offense.
Well, I mean, I don't think I would slander Phoenix for that. It's a tough loss. OKC is a machine, and once they get rolling, they keep going. I think the thing with Oklahoma City's defense is beyond, like, the ball pressure and the rotations, it's just consistent activity. Like, they work to really contain the paint. They show bodies on drives. They are physical, and you have to know when they are physical and how they're physical. And so when you watch them, it's going to be physicality on drives. It's going to be contact right on your hip when you try and drive the basketball. We're going to show help just in case you think you have a corner, then we're going to get back out. The moments where you watch Oklahoma City, you have to see the activity. Watch them slide their feet. Watch them guard their yard. And then you have to see how much they help, how they recover, how they help each other. The windows you have for an advantage close so quick offensively. And so you start to get sped up. You kind of get out of rhythm. Like, I think there was a possession, Saturday Mounds in the first quarter, where it's just denial, balls near half court. I'm physical. I fight over. We might switch. We switch. Okay, now I'm swinging another drive. Nope, cut that off. We swing it again. There's all this space. We're denying any sort of cut. So, okay, I'll drive as a counter. Nope, cut that off.
You didn't, what did you do?
You they pushed you. They disrupted you to get you out of your set. And now they're disrupting your flow. outside of it. So now you kind of have to find a way to consistently do what you want to do against that team. So I think that's been the fun part of watching their defense when we've just highlighted it game after game. Offensively, it's just a fact of the matter. They keep everyone involved. And so you never know who's going to set a screen. You never know who's going to flow into the next action. It's hard to really project what's going to happen, especially when you have a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander opening with rejects. When you have Jalen Williams and his driving ability, could come off a guard screen, could come off a kick. You have the times where, okay, Chet Holmgren, you're trailing a play. I'm just going to screen Mark Williams in the paint and we'll get you a look from three, or you can drive. They're starting to just punish defenses and punish breakdowns in a way that they had not before. So traditionally you could get this team in the mud. Now these days, okay, we're kind of putting pressure on you in a different way. We're reading what you want to do and we're comfortable. And I think that's where it's like, okay, someone's got to poke a hole in this.
Yeah, just two quick things for me. One, you mentioned like the Shai rejects, and it's funny that you say that because I was randomly looking at this last night to see who's towards the top of the league in terms of pick and roll rejects. What are they doing? So randomly, I started looking at last year, last W season actually, because Kelsey Plum was doing it a lot, and I was like, huh, what's going on here? Over 1.3 points per possession on trips featuring a pick and roll reject from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander this year, which is such a comically high number. And you talked a lot about the overall pick and roll growth for Shai and this Oklahoma City Thunder offense over the past year and a half. And so like that one just made me laugh. And so you saying that just sparked it. I was like, all right, I didn't have that written down in my notes, but I saw that. I was like, oh, snap. Good stuff from Steve. Second thing for me, I will say on the OKC front, and that'll help lead into the preview stuff. Phoenix was able to linger around a little bit. First quarter, early second, because of the turnovers for OKC. They have generally been very good at keeping the turnover count low. It was a little hazy earlier in that game. It was Phoenix defense, but there was also a little bit of carelessness. Hey, let's try to force this into a tight window, a little bit of miscommunication. Are you relocating all the way to the corner? Or are you cutting? They were able to get away with that because of what they did to Phoenix on the other end. As they head into this matchup with San Antonio, you don't want to give that offense and those guards in particular transition opportunities or early flow opportunities. And so, like, that's just a quick thing I want to keep an eye on with OKC. Again, they have been, you know, we just did the trivia on an earlier episode. Them and Boston have been right there in terms of the lowest turnover rates in the league. So I'm not saying this is a big OKC problem, but that did stand out to me if there's anything to kind of ding with that OKC performance. So it's going to be important there. But shout out to Phoenix. Still a good year. That was just an incredible effort from OKC. But finally, the San Antonio Spurs, still without Victor Wembanyama. We will see if we get him on Saturday. But a 132-110 victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. Stephon Castle, 30 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists in this one. Stole the show. And I just kind of came away. It's, you know, reminiscent of the conversation we had about what the Spurs offense has looked like since Wemby's been down. Here are a whole lot of off-ball screens and a whole lot of flares. Here are three guards that can get downhill and can operate ball screens for us. If you take away any of our early flow, these are also three guys that can just win their matchup when necessary. And if the defense is solid enough, or if you're tossing the ball across the lot, we can get busy in transition. And I think what stood out to me, again, San Antonio was able to find their flow. One of the things that I was curious about heading into this matchup is what the Lakers defense is going to look like against this version of the Spurs without Wemby, where it isn't as much of the mid-post catches for Wemby and the ISOs and, you know, trying to navigate, is this going to be a double team or not, et cetera. Wemby was obviously awesome before he went down, but it's just a different style of offense. This is a little bit more open. This is a little more up-tempo. And I think the Lakers trying to set their shell, the Spurs like, all right, well, cool. Here are all these pin-ins. Here are all these flares. Let's see if you can actually set up shop with your kind of help. And let's see how you – oh, go ahead.
Well, no, let's hang there for a second. Okay. And so your curiosity was on how the Lakers are going to guard. The Lakers are a team that we're going to switch. We're going to show early help to take away driving lanes. And we're going to put you in a position where, okay, are you going to slow down? Are you going to try and attack and we can help and we can recover? The issue is, as you mentioned, the flare screens. Luke Kornet or Kelly Olynyk trailing a play and deciding I'm going to screen someone. And so if you're bringing the ball up, and you're trying to build a wall, right, against Stephon Castle, against Dylan Harper, against De'Aaron Fox, and now a flare comes, okay, that's a pop to the wing. And so it's not just we can get a drive off that. No, we can flow into another screen. So I think one thing when you watch Luke Kornet, he does a really good job of getting to that second screen, of setting the first one and then turning right around into the next one to help that flow out. And so you've got them flaring a nail help. Now you have him slipping on a rescreen if that happens. And now, okay, we have driving lanes for our guards. And I think that's where, okay, they poked at that. De'Aaron Fox being able to make shots against switches was huge. Dylan Harper being able to win drives one-on-one was huge. And now you kind of had an ability to poke at what the Lakers want to do game plan-wise. We're poking at your switching, poking at your drop, or we're poking at your help. And now offensively, you have to now carry the load to make us face your defense that's set. And the Lakers weren't able to kind of poke at San Antonio the same way. So that's where you kind of credit the Spurs guards. And I thought Stephon Castle had great command in this game as far as just making right the right reads, the passing, getting in the paint, understanding what he needed to do. And the Spurs being able to consistently flow, it's fun to watch when they just play with pace, they move, they keep it moving, and they keep working to find different gaps.
Yeah, and from there, like, obviously the big three kind of the story in that regard, but because they have so many good off-ball threats on top of that, you already mentioned Luke Kornet is more so a willing screener, and what I love about the Kornet experience is that it's not just that for him. It'd be easy to kind of bake in, I'm going to set on-ball screen, I'm going to set off-ball screen, I am now going to the dunker spot. The way that they sprinkle in these middle of possession flashes to the elbows, like, okay, that one didn't work, use me as an elbow hub. Cut off of me. Let's flow into a handoff on top of that, and we can start to wheel over again. I think it's been a fun wrinkle to the San Antonio offense overall. You got to see elements of that in this game as well. And then from there, like, hey, Harrison Barnes, well, I've talked about him. He's knocked down shots. He's sprinkling in some timely drives so far this year. Julian Champagne knocking down shots. You never know where he is. And when you have three drivers like that, it's easier for him to kind of open up those relocations that he's so good at. It was an all-encompassing effort. Like, it was good stuff. Like, I think I had some concerns about the Lakers defense heading into this one. Like, a new shell base is what it's going to be, but like, how well was it going to be? I think the thing that kind of bothered me the most in this particular game is just how quickly they were matching up when they did find themselves trying to get back in transition and just trying to settle themselves for some of the early attacks with San Antonio. It didn't always feel clean. And I think that's more of, like, you obviously want communication to be better. I think LeBron also talked about the defensive effort after that game. But in general, I do wonder how much of that is we can clean this up with better communication and better chemistry versus this may just be a personnel issue against faster teams or teams that are stocked with guys that can really get downhill. So that's kind of a bigger picture thing that I want to keep tabs on with this Lakers group.
I mean, I think it just comes down to consistency. There are going to be matchups that poke and test their defenders. They're going to have lineups where teams are going to be willing to attack matchups. So how strong can your shell be? Can you recover out of it? But they don't have the margin for error to slip on the little things. And so you can't really mess up switches. You can't really be late on a rotation. You know, you're not really built to help and recover in that way consistently. We've seen them at times, including last year, had that kind of activity. But there are going to be nights where you're a little off. Defense isn't as sharp. Weak side's not as in engaged. And these things happen. So can they navigate those nights and get back on track? Like, I think the real story of that game was the end of the first half. Like, everything after LeBron James's dunk, it just fell apart. Like, they had the momentum. They fought back, got back in the game. And then what happened here? Turnover, transition bucket. Everyone's staring at each other. And then they came out in third quarter, got hit again. And then it's a whole different game. And so I think it's just, you know, understanding, okay, we fought our way back into this one. We got to finish this off and come back with momentum and kind of build on our habits.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Quick shout out, Luka with 35-8 in this one. A lot of... This was like a minor thought that I had watching it live than watching it back. Because we've talked earlier in the year about some the inside the arc scoring from Luka Doncic this year. He's always been very good at it. He has been insane as a mid-range scorer this year. He's killed it on those floater shots in particular this season. Spurs largely treated it with, okay, let's drop back. Let's let you have those. Let's see if we can limit threes where we can. But we'll let you rock with those. I do wonder if that becomes, it's a lot easier for me to say this on a podcast, Mike, than someone in the coaches meeting. But, like, does that become more of a template where, okay, this already isn't like a high 3-point rate team. We may just have to deal with this, contest this, and let's try to get ours on the other end, especially if we feel like we have matchups that we can poke at.
Yeah, it sounds good until he scores a bunch of points.
Yeah.
Stan Van Gundy was mad at the drop for the entire game. And they ended up, they still ended up doubling Luka in the second half, despite not necessarily wanting to do that all the time. So no, I don't think that's going to be a template. It's going to be a good idea. You're going to feel strong about it until you don't. That's the problem with Luka.
Yeah, there you go. It's, to your point, he finished it with 35 in that basketball game. That's not an easy thing to live with. But okay, it's almost preview time, Steve. We're going to take a quick break here. And when we return, let's have some fun with Knicks Magic. Let's have some fun with Spurs Thunder.
The smartest NBA coverage on YouTube 5 days a week. Watch the Dunker Spot, myself and Nekias Duncan delivering elite X's and O's, film breakdowns, and some of the best basketball talk you can find. Kevin O'Connor bringing you deep analysis and those great hoops conversations every week. Tom Haberstroh and Dan Devine breaking down the stats to define the league on the big number, plus fast daily NBA updates and trends from Dan Titus to keep you ahead of the timeline. If you love basketball, welcome home.
And we are back with our NBA Cup episode, and it is time to preview the semifinals, Steve. We're going to start out east. Once again, we have the New York Knicks taking on the Orlando Magic. And I say once again, not only because this will technically be the fourth matchup between these two teams already, but because we just saw this on Sunday.
Nekias, this is the fourth time these two teams have faced off in about a month. They will have faced off against each other in three of the last 4 weekends. Yeah, I think they're familiar.
Yeah, I think they have the ins and outs of each other, which funny is you kind of broaden the scope and look at where they're at in the Eastern Conference. Dude, this could end up being an Eastern Conference semis matchup if things hold, so we'll have to see what that looks like. But either way, we'll get there when we get there. NBA Cup semifinals. Orlando, 2-1 in the season series so far. The Knicks are coming off of their first victory against Orlando this season, a 106-100 victory. We did see Franz Wagner go down early in that one, so he's not going to be available in this game. But as I broaden out, one, I'm just excited to watch two good teams face off against each other. Two teams that, you know, as we broaden the scope, have looked to evolve offensively. New York with their overall empowerment and their pace, how quickly they want to get it up. The cuts that Steve has highlighted plenty of times on this podcast and other platforms has done a great job of doing so. Orlando wanting to play faster, integrating Desmond Bane. We just talked about what their offense looked like and what his usage looked like against Miami in particular. And so it's a cool storyline there. But I do kind of go to the front court in this one as I try to bear down on this matchup.
Well, before you go to the front court, let's hang on your first point. I think the back and forth here gets interesting because Orlando has been one of those teams who has found a way to be physical and work to bog down the Knicks offense and try and take things off the table. And so when you talk about the Knicks and their movement and their cutting, well, Orlando likes to deny some of that movement. So are we going to take some of that off the board? We're going to switch. We're going to keep some of these drives in front. And so at times in this matchup between these two teams, the Knicks haven't had the full menu offensively because, okay, this has been taken away. Let's try this. Let's move things around the board, which I think will tie into your front court point. Mm-hmm. But for the Knicks, it's going to be about maintaining and establishing tempo. For Orlando, it's going to be about making sure they put their feet down defensively, are able to kind of take some things off the board for the Knicks. Obviously, you know, Jalen Brunson has been a problem for the Magic. I think he's averaging 33.5 during NBA Cup play, shooting 54 from the field, 51 from three against the Magic in all three games. He's given them 30 every time. Mm-hmm. And that's while shooting, I think, 25% from three. So, yep. Okay, do we live with the Jalen Brunson portion and we take away the OG drives, the McHale drives? Do we just get them later in the clock? Can we disrupt them consistently? And then we get those stops and we get out and run. Because I think the one thing, even when New York scored against Orlando, hey, outlet, throw ahead, drive. Let's test their defense to see if they're going to be able to handle our flow, our drives, our attacks. And so I think that's kind of the back and forth there. But I think that ties into your front court question.
Yeah, I think one, just really good stuff there. But to the front court piece of this, one, this naturally is going to be a lot more on the shoulders of Paolo Banchero in this one, as he's still working his way back after his lengthy absence. Now Franz is out, the usage is going to go up. You're going to need Desmond Bane as well. But if we're talking about the front court, I am curious about the Paolo of it all. Who is he going to guard? How many switches is he going to sprinkle in defensively? And then offensively, what exactly is the usage going to look like for him? How many of the post-ups do we see from Paolo? Like, do we get into some of these smaller screens for him to get switches? New York has been more willing to switch, and now we can try to poke at something that way. How often do we see Paolo as a screener? But again, in light of the switches, like what kind of advantages are you creating there, at least early on? I'm curious about that portion. And on the New York side, you talked about Jalen Brunson and all the buckets that he's been getting. Karl Anthony Towns has not had the same success against the Orlando Magic, at least so far this year. And I think you zoom out this year, like Cat just hasn't had the same shot-making season that we're accustomed to. I think that's ultimately going to perk up, but it just hasn't hit that level yet. And so I do kind of wonder, one, on a very basic level, which version of Cat are we getting? Like, do we actually get a Cat explosion? And like within that, what does that look like? How do you get him going? Are you posting him up? Are you going to more pick and roll with him? Are you using him more as a hub, getting him touches in the middle of the floor? Does that make it easier for him to puncture some of the collective size that Orlando has? I am just curious to see like what those two guys in particular are going to look like usage-wise.
Well, I think the thing is you have to get them both within the flow of what you're doing. And then if they are having success, then you may lean into some more of their actions. I think for both teams at times in these matchups, you lean too far into one, that's fine. But is the defense going to react by putting two on the ball or doubling? And are you taking away from your offensive game plan by doing so? I think I remember, I think the Knicks went to Orlando earlier in the season, and Orlando was doing a great job of just being physical, getting them late in the clock, bogging them down. They wanted to establish Karl Anthony Towns, so they wanted to get him some more post-ups. The problem was they were already playing slow, and it took a while to get Cat in the ball in the post, and so they became slow and stagnant. So I think there are a multitude of ways they can get Cat involved. A lot of them you listed, but I don't know if you have to sacrifice what you do offensively to do so. I think you want him to get in the flow. If he has it going, you keep going to him. For Paolo, it's all about quick decisions. And so we know he's going to get his post-ups. We know he's going to be involved in pick and roll. But I think if you're Orlando, you want Desmond Bane downhill. You want Jalen Suggs downhill. You want Anthony Black downhill. You want Paolo on top of that. And so if these guys have it going, we'll see a lot more of what they do. But I don't necessarily know if they have to stir the drink based on how these two teams play offense, especially early on this season.
Got you. Can I ask an annoying Nikias question based off what you just said there?
Sure.
So since there's no Franz, or what we saw before Franz ultimately went down, Josh Hart got the Paolo assignment. We saw OG more so as a roamer. Well, OG got Franz. We had Mikal Bridges chasing around Desmond Bane. If you're New York, like how much of that do you shift that at all? Do you give OG the Paolo assignment now with no Franz? Or do you kind of keep things where they were?
I don't think he changed much. I think everyone will get a little bit of a taste of him. As I always say, there's going to be some level of switching or cross-matching, especially in transition as these things happen. But I think for the Knicks, it's more about having the collective effort, being able to be switchable and having the ability to have those three Bridges, OG, and Hart on ball, but more so their work off ball is going to be just as important in this game. And so I think they keep it similar.
Okay. Figured I would test the temperature there. And like the Orlando piece of that is going to be interesting to me as well, because we did see a little bit of cross match from Orlando side, because they wanted to keep Wendell Carter Jr. on, wanted to keep him on Karl Anthony Towns. I think they had Franz on Mitchell Robinson for a little bit. And I was like, huh, that is interesting in light of what Mitchell Robinson in particular can do on the offensive glass. That could get a little bit dicey. I'm not sure what that looks like. And so now with Franz out of this, like, okay, do you reconfigure things on that front? Like, I'm always curious about the matchups, as you very well know, much to your chagrin probably at this point, this stage of the podcast. But I am curious to see like how that matches up and like how that influences the margins of this thing. Because I do agree with you. Broadly with Cat and Paolo, you want them to be more flow based than here's the ball, go create something for us. Because I think with the way that these defenses are structured and because of the personnel that they have, like if I'm New York and I'm putting Josh Hart on Paolo, or if I do shift OG to Paolo, I don't need to send two. Take these contested turnaround jumpers. If you make them, good job, but we're not bending our defense. We're not breaking guys' shell to get out of that. And if you're Karl Anthony Towns, we're going to give you a mid-post touch against Wendell Carter Jr. Like, you were good enough to win those matchups. We don't think we need to send two towards you, unless you just find yourself, like, trapped towards the baseline. We can spring some stuff at you that kind of way, make you make decisions that way. But we don't have to. So I'm with you on that front. I think beyond that, actually, to the Brunson piece, because Orlando has been willing to switch against him. And Brunson, as he does, I have a bigger wing on me. I can just hit you with all these jukes and fakes, and I can get to some of these turnaround jumpers. I get you some of these pull-ups, some of these push-outs, et cetera. And you mentioned the three-point shooting. If you're Orlando, do you shift anything with what you want to do against Jalen Brunson? Like, do you consider ramping things up against him? Or are you fine with switching and kind of letting him bake kind of in a vacuum?
I'm fine with switching. If the stakes are high enough, we need to trap, we can trap. We have Wendell Carter Jr. who can get to the level and do those type of things. But I think the thing with the Knicks, especially these days, you see them a lot of times just kind of clear aside. They get one screen for Jalen Brunson, get a switch that they like, and now either he attacks and boogies with an empty side or someone else comes and sets either a second screen or slips and rides out. So it's a little difficult to always navigate and say, okay, let's have our big trap. It might not be the big that's screening for him, and he might not have the ball at the start. I think that kind of just ties into what the Knicks have done offensively to try and clear space and to try and do different things to just open things up and play out of the flow to where, okay, we know what our spacing is. We know where our cuts are. If I don't have it, I can get off of it. And so I think it's just going to be a battle of wills between two teams that want to do different things offensively. And if they can attain them against teams that are designed to try and make it tough.
Okay. I think that's fair. Can I ask you a quick free throw?
Sure.
Whose second unit do you trust more in this game?
I mean, there's always the threat of Jordan Clarkson doing things, and or if Deuce McBride comes back. Anthony Black's starting now. I'm gonna go Knicks.
Okay. I think like the injuries and like kind of the refiguring of the lineups is what made it interesting for me too. Because I think like in a vacuum, I probably would have leaned Orlando with how Anthony Black has played in particular, and with Tristan Da Silva, but like. We are having Anthony Black start, like Tristan Da Silva's mixed in some starts. Like it's just odd on that front. I will say very quickly, like I've talked about Jonathan Isaac before, a couple of years ago, insane defender, low minutes because he can't stay healthy. Last year did not look like himself. This year, starting to see the defense perk up a little bit as of late. I did think going back to that Miami game, like him being able to switch a little bit of everything was a big part of Orlando being able to flatten things out late in that first quarter and early in that second. So I'm curious of the defense of that group. I think quietly this could be a pretty important Goga game, especially if the Knicks do once again try to get busy on the offensive glass. These are two teams that are in the top 10 in offensive rebound rate this year per cleaning the glass, so you want to keep an eye on that margin battle there. I may still lean Orlando, honestly, and I might just end up wrong. Answer my own question, I might go there.
Interesting. Not surprising, though. I do have a little fun. I do have a little fun fact for you, right?
Yeah.
So Jalen Brunson is only averaging about six or so free throw attempts per game. Do you know the number against the Orlando Magic this year?
I should, because I have like the points and assists in my notes right here. What were the free throws though? It hasn't felt like a high free throw.
He's averaging 10.3 free throw attempts against the Orlando Magic.
It is a high free throw one, then.
Yeah, very funny. The three of the top teams he has high at free throws against: 10.3 Orlando, 13 Cleveland, and 9.5 against the Bucks.
That would track. I feel like he's had fun battles against all three of those teams over the last two or three years, so that would track. Okay. Well, there's the Brunson of it all. There's Cav it all. Steve, do you have an X factor in this one?
To have an X factor? Who's your X factor?
Mikal Bridges for me.
Really? Why?
I do think he ends up getting the Bane assignment. And so naturally, if he is able to disrupt all of the Bane usage, if he's able to thwart some of these drives from Desmond Bane, that puts a little bit of a cap on the Orlando Magic offense, at least in theory. And then on the other end, just kind of looking at these three matchups, like he hasn't had the most efficient scoring bit through these three matchups. And I think his initiation, his drives, his three-point shooting in particular can be important in this matchup. And if this is a situation where New York is getting stops, I think the transition attacks from Mikal Bridges is going to be pretty important in this one. And even zooming out from this particular matchup, like he has just been, he's been a big part of a lot of those kind of a Kappa run with a big three or an and one finish. Like he's been part of those splashy plays. I think he could be a real momentum shifter in this one. So I went Mikal, probably a little overqualified for this one, honestly. Like, I thought about Mitchell Robinson because, I will grab all the offensive rebounds, but Orlando may also say, how about we just hack Mitchell Robinson to see if he makes free throws? That's probably the better answer of this one, but I went with Mikal with New York. And then with Orlando, Wendell Carter Jr. for me. He's going to have to hold up against Cat. And I think, you know, just looking through these three matchups, He's mixed in some switching, but it has been a lot of I'm at the level I'm dropping back. Like, he's going to have to navigate that, especially if Jalen Brunson is the one initiating a lot of these pick and rolls in particular. And so how he holds up in space is going to be important. And offensively, which version of him are we going to get? Are we getting the rolls? Are we getting the pops? What level of playmaking are we getting? How helpful is he going to be on the glass? Again, I think the offensive rebound battle is going to be important between these two teams. Go to the defensive end. Like, is he bossing guys? Is he helping them in possessions? Like, he's a fine rebounder, not an elite one. So, like, how does he factor in there? Could just have Orlando's bigs as my X factor, but I settled in on Wendell. So that's kind of where I'm at with that.
That's fair. I think I'm going to go Josh Hart as the X factor for the Knicks, just because the better he plays, the better they run. Their magic are probably going to dare him to make some shots, get some timely baskets, get some drives, get some defense. That helps the Knicks. I think your Bridges point is fair, because they're going to need his scoring. He's going to have a game against the Magic, especially if they're switching. So can he have the same impact? Can he find some cutting? Can he attack in transition? The Knicks as a total whole are best when they have three or four of their guys going. And so Bridges has got to be one of those guys, especially in a matchup against the Magic. For the Magic, I go with Anthony Black.
That's fair.
I think that they need him to be aggressive. They're going to need his defense. They're going to need his drives. And I think when he's able to unlock some of that, just gives them a lot of lineup versatility, lets them move through things differently, and keeps them with the ability to flow from side to side. You know, he can initiate, he can kick, he can get it back if he relocates. And so the better he plays, I feel like the better the Magic are.
Yeah, I like it. Who do you have winning this one?
The Knicks.
Okay. I got the Magic, Steve. I'm already on the record with it, so I'm going to stick with it. I think they played the song.
Speaking of sticking with it, stick with us after this break. We'll be back to talk about the West side of the NBA Cup semis.
We are back and we are heading out west. Steve, it is time to discuss this matchup between the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Naturally, the biggest question, figuratively and literally, looming over this one is if we'll see Victor Wembanyama in this basketball game. Like, traveling with the team to Vegas, we will see if he's actually going to play. If he does, that is a whole lot of star power. And that is a fun wrinkle to add and a fun test for this OKC defense to deal with, in light of the fact that, you know, we're coming off the Magic Knicks section where they have played three times already. This is going to be their fourth. We haven't seen Spurs Thunder yet. The Thunder haven't seen Victor Wembanyama yet. And so I guess the basic question I'll toss your way first, Steve, is if we do get Victor Wembanyama in this basketball game, where do you think we see the biggest impact for him against OKC? Is it what he can disrupt defensively or the challenges he may pose offensively?
Well, number one, it's very interesting. OKC and San Antonio have not faced off yet this season. Makes it pretty fun. They will play each other three times in the next 13 or so days, including Christmas Day. So they're going to get real familiar with each other, which starts to get real interesting, because in the back of my head, as everyone has rightfully praised the Oklahoma City Thunder for their start and asked the question, hey, what do we do with this team? What is the answer? And I keep looking at the Western Conference standings, and I keep seeing the San Antonio Spurs around that 4-5 range. And my brain goes, what if the answer is just Victor Wembanyama? What if the really tall alien is the one who could just undo what OKC does? How? Not sure, because OKC is very good. But he's got size. What if he's able to kind of cut off the paint? What if he changes that? What if he's able to take Chet Holmgren off the board? What if he's able to punish Chet Holmgren on the other end? What if Wemby, on top of what these guards do, just adds a different element? Now, OKC has seen great players. OKC has thrown great players into different positions. And, you know, you never know. It might just be Alice Caruso, make life hard on Victor Wembanyama. We've seen that movie before.
He can't dribble. Yeah.
But it gets very fun to see what that would even look like. This version of Wemby with the Spurs against this juggernaut Thunder team on both ends of the floor, I think that would be interesting to see. So I'm hopeful for his health, but I would like to see what that looks like. And if the Thunders decide, hey, not you either, we'll find out quickly.
Yeah, like that's where like, one, I want to see Victor Wembanyama play basketball, because why would I not want to see him play basketball? But as we've kind of gotten to the lead up of this game, and I said this to you yesterday, I'm just like, I don't know if Wemby coming off of an extended absence, and we are slow playing this to make sure he is 100% healthy, I don't know if I want his first game, if I'm the Spurs. Like, Wemby is a super competitor. He's ready to take it on against anyone. So this is outside of him. If I am the Spurs, I don't know if I want my first matchup after this kind of absence to be dealing with all of that at once. But that's a whole lot of they have the personnel to poke at everything in the multitude of ways that we have seen, you know, Wemby struggle or ultimately overcome different things. Hey, what does Wemby look like against switches? The Thunder can switch. Hey, what does Wemby look like against double teams? Oh, the Thunder can do that too. Like, again, he's good enough to handle it, but it's just like, I don't know if I want that to be the first one.
Okay.
I would like to ease him into these. If I am the Spurs, this is not Wemby. If I am the Spurs, I am like, hey, let's.
Okay. Let's walk through this real quick. Now, okay. I've pulled up the Spurs schedule. I'm no mathematician. Again, they face OKC in 3 of their next 6 games. So in between, they play the Washington Wizards at the Atlanta Hawks and then at the Washington Wizards. He's going to have to see them if he comes back.
That's true. But like, if I can start him against those versus the Thunder, now he has some game reps. He's getting to get more of the win. Because like, here's my thing. And I say this as someone, obviously I don't have Spurs sources. If Wemby plays Saturday, is it just zero restrictions? You can play 35 if we need you to, 39, or is it going to be more of the shorter stints?
It's likely.
Let's keep this around under 30. I would assume it's going to be the latter.
It's likely a minutes restriction. Come on.
Yeah. So that's where I'm just like, I would rather have the ramp up period be with those other games so we can have full fledged Wemby against OKC versus the minute restriction version against OKC. That's just me. I'm fine with being on the island on that. But like, that's just kind of my thinking with that. I would want to ease him in elsewhere. But to answer my own question, though, I do think I would be more interested in like what the Wemby defense means in this particular matchup versus the offense. Because to your earlier point, just what OKC has been able to do with anyone being able to initiate, anyone being able to screen, the overall driving talent of this roster, the paint has been a huge portion of the OKC success formula. Puncturing that and then kicking out and generating open threes is very important. You put Victor Wembanyama in that, who since he's been in the league, the rim rate for opposing offenses just fall off of a cliff when he is on the floor. Yeah, that could get kind of hazy for an OKC team who, again, top 5 offense this year. They went pretty much the first month of the season not being able to knock down threes. And we are now talking about a one-off in the semifinals. And if they win, another one-off in the NBA Cup, though that's not going to count towards the stats and all that good stuff. And so if you're just telling me Wemby is here, we're not able to puncture the paint in the same way. And now we get the 2 of 7 from 3 game from Lu Dort. We get the 2 of 7 from 3 game from Jalen Williams. In a one-off, that could be kind of dangerous. So, like, that's I would be more interested in the defense portion for Wemby if he does make his return.
Okay, understood. Now, what if he doesn't? Because if he doesn't, this feels like a very good test of what San Antonio has shown so far. Hey, this guard play is really fun. Here's the Oklahoma City Thunder defense prepared with multiple people who can guard all of them and will switch and are physical on all drives. And so it's very fun that you like to get downhill. Hey, here is an elbow in your hip. And we are showing hands and we are getting out and we are recovering. And if you beat that, there's help behind it. So we're going to test that. Mm-hmm. This defense, boy, you guys are competing. The effort's there. Are you ready to keep the ball in front? Mm-hmm. Hey, nice drop defense. Here's a reject. Can you recover and make multiple efforts? Here's another drive. That's where it gets fun. And like, that's the fun of this matchup for me. Like, I'd love to see Wemby, but if we don't see Wemby, okay, let's see how good this is. Let's see how much flow you can maintain. Because we love the off-ball movement. It's been fantastic. Physical denial. Can you play through that? Can you keep your pace? Can you keep your flow? So I think that's where it becomes a test for the Spurs, sans Wemby, and another example of what the OKC Thunder can do on both ends of the floor.
No, I like it. I like it. I think this, without Wemby, would absolutely just be a drive battle that I'd be super interested in. And like different types of drivers in that aspect. So if you're just trying to study how players win in that kind of context. This is a fun one for you. Shea does not drive the same way as De'Aaron Fox, as the same way as Stephon Castle, in the same way as Dylan Harper, and on and on and on. Even to the bigs, like we've talked about Chet's growth inside the arc, like a whole lot of pull-up jumpers and turnarounds for him, but like he's putting his head down a little bit more than what we're accustomed to. He's gotten comfortable there. And so like I do have the typical Nikias question, hey, if there's no Wimby, how exactly is San Antonio matching up? I would assume this means Stephon Castle, you have the Shea Gilgeous-Alexander assignment. We'll see what that looks like. I was watching back Spurs Thunder from last year, since we haven't seen him this year, and personnel obviously different. It was very funny to see like Stephon Castle and Chris Paul on the floor at the same time. It's like, ah, yeah, that is a thing that was just happening, huh? But shout out Chris Paul. But for OKC, certainly not like a new concept, but it was a lot of, hey, Shea, call for a guard to screen for you. Here's a switch. Now it is time to attack. Either to go into another ball screen, or I just have a matchup I want. San Antonio gave up those switches. We're going to try to show help. And OKC was able to puncture a lot of those gaps. They were able to generate a lot of good shots. And so I am curious to see like how much of that formula remains the same for San Antonio on this one. Like how willing are they going to be to give Julian Champagne the Shea matchup? Let's switch him out. Let's let you handle that. Harrison Barnes, who again, I think has had a good year for San Antonio overall this year. Are you ready to have to deal with that? And if this does end up being a shot-making game for OKC off of that, if you're showing that those extra bodies and things like that, it could get interesting for the Spurs defense. Like, I wonder, does Mitch Johnson press the zone button in this game? Like, it's not a thing. I don't think that's a thing he's afraid to do. As you've talked about, though, Steve, like, this Thunder team is a lot more comfortable against zone.
Hasn't been a thing that the OKC Thunder have been afraid to attack. I'll tell you that much this year.
That much is true. But hey, it's a one-off. We just need y'all to be uncomfortable. I don't care if you've been excellent against it this year. Are you going to be good against it today? Like, I just wonder, like, what kind of changeups do we see from San Antonio's defense? Because I think that, again, like, I would be more intrigued by how the Wimby impacts that end of the floor if he's there. If he's not, all due respect, Luke Cornette is just not Victor Wembanyama. Like, I don't think there's going to be a level of fear for OKC to attack the basket. In theory, it should be more free-flowing. But that is also where I say, as the Spurs have been a team, we'll drop, we'll show help from a little bit of everywhere. Our guards can get very aggressive off the ball in particular. I go back to that early portion of the Suns game. Hey, you can't walk into this one thinking we're just going to be fine. If you turn the ball over against the Spurs, they will score on you. They will build confidence. So you can't. This is not going to be an easy one. Like, I think I'll spoil my own pick. I do think the Thunder win this game. But, like, I would not walk into this one like we can sleepwalk through this one offensively.
Now, very quickly, what about the Oklahoma City's 24-1 start, including 16 consecutive victories, has made you believe that they are sleepwalking through anything?
They've had some interesting first halves, which sounds very funny as I say that out loud. But in a literal sense, like, hey, listen, we had a they did lose to Portland, but like, hey, we've had a Kings first half where it's like, hey, wait a minute, what y'all got going on? What is this? Like, they've been in some battles to where they aren't making shots, or they're turning it over a little bit, or the defense isn't as airtight as it can be. Now, the fun of this Thunder group, to your overall point, is that when they do flip that switch and lock in, they can just throw a game over the top rope in 2 minutes. Like, you think about, like, the 15-16 Warriors where it's, oh, here's the three-point barrage. You went from up 8 to down 15. You don't know what happened. The Thunder more so do that defensively to where, wait, we haven't gotten a shot up, it feels like, in 3 minutes because y'all are being rude. And now here's another Cason Wallace pick six. Here's a Lu Dort steal. Oh, no, we're down 15. So, like, they can still do that. So that's where, again, I ultimately land on, I think the Thunder win this game. But, no, they've absolutely had some lulls throughout this 24-1 stretch. They've overcome them, but this Spurs team's good. That's all I'm saying.
This is just interesting talking basketball with you, because on one hand, you will ask, hey, is Oklahoma City the greatest team ever? And on the other hand, you will talk yourself into the San Antonio Spurs sans Victor Wembanyama potentially pushing the Thunder towards the brink of a loss in the NBA Cup.
Any given Saturday. Listen, even the greatest team, like, there's been no team that went 82-0 and played A-plus basketball in all their matchups. Like, these things happen. All I'm saying is this Spurs team is a little too good to have, like, I think it was the first matchup against Sacramento. If you have that first half against this version of the Spurs, you are going to be in a different position, I feel. That's more of my overall point. They just got to be careful. It's a good team.
Quote from, first off, Any Given Saturday was not the name of the movie. Secondly, quote from our dad, about avoiding complacency during their historic start. You have to understand anything in the past takes you out of the present moment. Anything in the future takes you out of the present moment. And the competition happens in the present moment. I think they're going to be fine.
Okay. I ultimately think they're also going to be fine. I'm just putting some caution to the wind. They are on the revenge tour, Steve. That is the one thing I haven't heard too much of. That was not a fun end to their NBA Cup experience last season. They may be motivated for this one. And if the Suns game was any indication, they are absolutely going to be motivated in this one. But I just want to see what it looks like. Quickly on the X Factor front for me, Harrison Barnes, be ready to make shots, be ready to drive, be able to hold up defensively. Cason Wallace, again, I have loved the defense. He is part of the initiation package for OKC. I do think the Spurs are going to be fine with letting him shoot, despite what he's shooting so far this year. He's got to be ready to knock down shots, too. Those would probably be the two guys that I would highlight primarily. A lot of different X factors within this one, especially with these second units. Like Keldon Johnson could play a big part in this one. AJ Mitchell could play a big part in this one. But that's kind of where I land on the X factor front. Do you have X factors in this one, Matt? In this one, Steve?
San Antonio, cross your fingers.
Oh my. Yeah, I'll leave it alone for now, but I'm excited to see what these matchups are going to look like. Steve, I have the Thunder in this one, which sets up, at least for me, would set up Thunder Magic, which would be a funny one for me. I think you would have Thunder Knicks, and honestly the fun of this four, like any combination would be a good matchup. Like if we get Knicks Spurs, I wouldn't hate that. If we get Magic Spurs, I certainly wouldn't hate that.
Well, I mean, that's the fun of the NBA Cup. You tap into the early season competitive nature of basketball where teams are up and down trying to figure each other out. It's really competitive in league right now. You look at these standings, you have a bad couple of days, you slide in both conferences. And so we get two bonus matchups and the winners get to face each other. And so that's always the fun part. So whoever wins, we should hopefully get three really good basketball games. Mm-hmm.
I'm here for it. I am here for it. A lot of money on the line. A lot of fun basketball set to happen in Vegas this weekend. So be prepared to tap in. But ultimately, thank you for tapping in with us on this episode of The Dunker Spot. How did I do? Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Be on the lookout for the new Yahoo NBA YouTube page. But in the meantime, subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Catch us every Tuesday and Friday. But coming soon, an NBA-specific channel. You want to tap in with us. We got good stuff coming. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, enjoy NBA Cup play, and we will catch y'all later.